In today's quest, Mortal Kombat was right all along. Finish him. This is the quest for power. Welcome to the Quest for Power, where we are ranking and reviewing all of the European monarchs from the early Middle Ages to World War I. We are your party members on a journey for historical knowledge, Scott and Michael, roasters, reviewers, defilers, and praisers.
Of all kings and queens. Granted, we haven't done queens yet. They're on their
way.
Well,
the European ones, anyways.
Yeah, that is true.
We can't say all of them.
That is true.
Maybe next time, or in a bonus one, we will rank and review Burger King. Since
yes.
He could be a pretty great monarch, but I think I would give him a pretty good roast, too.
Would he? The real question is, could he attain High King status, or would he be burnt alive? Or would he just be made at court? I feel like McDonald's would have him burnt alive.
I think that people who are high think he's a king.
Oh, that yeah, that could be.
No, it's okay. Yeah, we'll have to roast him next time. So, but getting back into the thick of things, all jokes aside. So, we are back to the downfall of the Vandal Kingdom. We had a lovely time following Hilderic and his quest to piss everybody off around him.
Yeah, which is always a great thing to do when you're a monarch, is, you know, get all the powerful people around you just irritated as hell. He did not piss off one person, and it was a powerful person, but that person was all the way over in Constantinople and didn't really do him any help, which would That's be Justinian. Right.
Yes, the big man himself, all yes. The way over in Istanbul. Not Constantinople. So, but let's also get that other announcement out of the way. We're jumping around like a bunch of, I don't know, fleas. Fleas jump a lot. We are jumping around. So let's talk about making friends, not just with Justinian, but making friends with us and our listeners. So give us a like on Facebook, Instagram, Quest for Power Pod, or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. All that fun stuff. And we can be your good friend Justinian, although that's a bold thing for me to say because we have not gone through the episode yet, and I don't know how much of a help Justinian is, but we will be there on the internet. Yes.
On your quest for power.
Your quest for power, I say, because knowledge is power. And yes. We are your quest for knowledge, your quest for power.
Yeah. This is off to a wonderful start. How have you been? I mean, I can't really say, like, I don't know what you've been up to. Last time we talked, we took our love of the high seas and actually did it in real life on a cruise, so...
That's
we had our
right.
Little seaworthy adventure there.
That's true. No, it's pretty cool because having never been really on a cruise before on the ocean, I think it was kind of wild to look out in all directions and just be like, yep, there is nothing but water. There is no land. This ship goes down.
kind of SOL.
Yeah, no, engineering is a fantastic thing. It blows my mind that you can have so much stuff on one ship and it just stays afloat, that you can do all the stuff. It stays afloat and it stays relatively steady.
Cruise ships used to be known as like floating palaces. Now it's like a floating city. Like it even had its own Main Street, not Mon Street, Main Street.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it was.
So it was pretty cool. Was a fan, and having some drinks here and there helped too. So
Yeah, and it was nice to finally see you in person. I mean, it's yeah. only been for, what, 2 years since About my wedding? Years.
Yeah, long time.
Long time.
Yeah, we remembered what we looked like.
Yep.
And met some good characters, on our flight back. So,
oh, that's right. Yeah.
All in all, yeah. Yeah, you know, sometimes you live the dream of getting that nice little reseating to the exit row.
Oh, that was nice. When you can fully stretch your legs all the way out and you still can't touch the other seat, that on a plane, that's the good life right there.
Oh, yeah. It's the good stuff. So, but let's get to the actual good stuff, the meat and potatoes of this podcast, if you will. And let's get on to our story today.
With Gelimer. All right, I hope you all have enjoyed your worthless, pathetic kings, because for a while we are going to have some pretty powerful ones. Gelimer, you can make up your mind on if he's powerful or not. But we have someone pretty awesome for next time that I've been working on, and we'll talk about it at the end of the episode, but I'm pretty excited for that. Obviously, before we get into the story, we got to go into our sources. This one is really apparent in this one that this was written by the Romans, that we have no idea what the Vandals thought about or their viewpoint was during his whole reign. It was purely on the people who did not like him, mainly Procopius, who wrote about the Vandal Wars in general with the Eastern Empire. He is more of a secular writer. And then you have Victor Avita, who wrote about the persecution of the Catholics under the Vandals, like we talked about last time. So he's not going to be very positive on them at all. And with that,
on to the quest.
On to the main quest. Previously on the quest for power. We began with the Vandal Kingdom as a small fledgling tribe, possibly from Scandinavia. Through the sands of time, they made their way all the way into Gaul, which is modern-day France, into Hispania, which is Spain. There, they survived several devastating blows from our previous king, Euric of the Visigoths, and eventually built up an impressive sea fleet. The legendary king Gaiseric the Cruel used the sea fleet to cross into Africa and built the Vandal Kingdom on the bones of the existing Roman administration. Later in his rule, Gaiseric sailed to Rome, stripped the Eternal City of all of its possessions, including Empress Eudoxia and her two daughters, along with a few bronze roof tiles during a 14-day peaceful sack. That has got to be one of my favorite, like, talkings about a sack. The fact that you could just imagine 2 weeks of, like, people in your city just, you know, calmly taking crap down off your buildings and stashing into their boats.
Yeah, grab your morning coffee, just stand outside, look at the sunset and the Vandals tearing apart your temples.
What a nice little calm.
The best part of waking up is tearing your shit up.
Oh, this is going to be a disaster of an episode. Oh, benefits of behind the scenes of recording on a Friday. After Gaiseric passed away, his powerful kingdom slowly collapsed under the watch of many kings who succeeded him. Our last king, Hilderic, as we stated in the top of the episode, managed to irritate all the powerful nobles around him, which led to his downfall and the ascension of Gelimer, our final king of the Vandal Kingdom.
Something tells me that the Vandals don't come out of this one very well.
No, there's a reason why that all we know of the Vandals in today's terms is the term vandalize, which usually means to destroy, you know, leave marks, and then be gone. Without further ado, I'll rise and do reverence to Gelimer, first of his name, the usurper, king of the Alani and the Vandals. Gelimer was Gaiseric's great-grandson and the son of Gelerus, who was our King Thrasamund's younger brother. quite a brother sister thing going on there.
Well, that family is nothing but messed up at this point.
Yeah, he. It is said he was thought to be the best warrior of his time. He was a cunning man and had an insatiable lust for the money of others. I love that part. I have never heard of it put that way before.
I'll say, Papa Geyseric would be proud.
He really would. While Hilderic was busy antagonizing the nobles, Gelimer was at work developing relationships with the nobles. And here's a little quote from Procopius that the DM's voice will be in use for.
He was no longer able to restrain his thoughts, but allying himself with all of the noblest of the Vandals, he persuaded them to wrest the kingdom from Hilderic as being an unwarlike king who had been defeated by the Moors. Thus, Gelimer seized the supreme power and imprisoned Hilderic, and also Homer and his brother Hogius, and he had ruled the Vandals for 7 years.
Gelimer was crowned king of the Alani and the Vandals on June 15th, 530. As discussed by Procopius, this was a welcome change to the majority of the disgruntled nobles in the unwarlike ways of Hilderic and his suspiciously pro-Roman tendencies.
Yeah, that was a problem.
Yeah, the Vandals hate the Romans, and it's generally not to be, oh, I like the Romans, when, you know, everyone in your society has grown up hating them. It's just not going to work out well.
Yeah. I can't imagine the Romans were very fond of them either.
Oh, yeah. No, they remembered a lot of the things that Geyseric did for many, many years, even though most of those people were no longer around. If any of them are longer around.
Well, you know, that's how grudges are, right?
Yeah. Well, not long after he had seized power, Gelimer received messages from Emperor Justinian demanding that Gelimer wait for his turn at kingship until Hilderic's natural death. He basically went, you wait your turn. You took your crown away from your family member, and that's wrong. You know better.
Mom said it's my turn with the crown.
Yeah. Gelimer replied to these demands going, yeah, no, I think I will keep the crown. It's kind of shiny. It's got a little ruby on it. I like it. I actually like it a lot. I think I'm going to keep it.
He wants that coin.
Yeah, he's got it.
He wants that face on the coin.
That's it. Yes, that's what he wanted all along. He gave the excuse to Justinian's emissaries that Hilderic was planning on changing Geyseric's succession law to give the crown to the closest relatives rather than the oldest male of the line. And then he then sent his emissaries back on their way to Constantinople, being like, pretty much, go tell Justinian to pound sand. As soon as the emissaries were on their way, Gelimer then went, bring me Hilderic's close relative, Homer, and he blinded him to prevent him from ever becoming king.
Wow.
Now, I know this sounds harsh. This is par on the course in medieval times, especially in court intrigue. Instead of outright killing threats, you can also take the path of gouging their eyes out.
Ugh. That's, I feel like killing, probably.
Yeah.
Sounds simpler, doesn't it?
I don't understand the whole gouging the eyes out instead of just killing them. Unless it's like to humiliate it's them?
One crime is more unforgivable than the other. Yeah, you just want them to, I was about to say, see your victory, but obviously that's not the intent here.
Well, yeah, and there's that. But also, a lot of them did die later from, you know, their eyes being gouged out, as you would expect. It's not like they're doing some high technique of, you know, gouging their eyes out. Probably just taking, like, a knife. I have
the
no
finest
idea.
Surgeons in Europe.
Yeah, the finest surgeons in Europe at the time. although some societies at this time just force someone to shave their head and force them to be a monk, and that accomplishes the same thing. But, you know, the Vandals don't do anything half-assed. They got to make sure that he can never see again. It wasn't long before the emissaries were back and annoying him again in the throne room, in Justinian, demanding that he send Hilderic, Homer, and Hoggis to Constantinople. All right, if you're not going to take care of them nicely, at least bring them to here. And
blind them all.
Gelimer,
send them.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. Actually, that would have been great in a horrifying sense. Anytime we say something cooler, that it's because it's we're far removed from it, and we're looking at it characters wise. He basically went to the emissaries. You think I'm stupid? I'm just gonna give you the biggest threat to my power. No, 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 no. And then he proceeds to tell them to take this back to their meddling emperor, and he hands them a little note that they are gonna say that Scott will then once again use his great DM voice for.
All right. Let's see. I'm already sensing a little bit of sass here. It feels sassy to me because we kind of have a little inferred truth here. But all right. King Gelimer to the Emperor Justinian. Neither have I taken the office by violence, nor has anything unholy been done by me to my kinsmen. For Hilderic, while planning a revolution against the House of Geiseric, was dethroned by the nation of the Vandals. I was called to my kingdom by my years, which gave me preference according to the law. Now, it is well for one to administer the kingly office, which belongs to him, and to not make the concerns of his others his own. Hence for you also, who have a kingdom, meddling in others' affair is not just. And if you break the treaty and come against us, we shall oppose you with all our power, calling to witness the oaths which were sworn by Zeno, from whom you have received the kingdom which you hold.
Mic drop. What an eloquent way of telling Justinian to go to hell.
Yeah, it really, I don't know, it feels sassy to me, but I know it's a very official decree.
Oh,
but
yes.
Because we're you know, we know that he obviously did not obtain his kingship lawfully. It sounds sassy when you know the truth.
I agree. I enjoy it very much.
I didn't do anything wrong. Yeah. I'm just Mr. Lawful over here.
Yeah, he was going to overthrow the kingdom of Geiseric, which I think is what the Vandal kingdom should be called. Because he is the only king to really do anything.
The only real king.
Now, if you notice in that quote when they say all sworn by Zeno, if anyone's confused by that, Zeno was a predecessor of Justinian, and there were all sworn by him basically that he will leave the Vandals alone as long as they had some sort of agreement going
just
on.
Just if I had read into that, the last line does say that, from who you have received the kingdom which you hold.
Yeah.
That does imply predecessorship.
Shortly after telling the emperor to stop meddling in the affairs of others, Geiseric received reports from spies that there was a massive fleet building up in Constantinople. So, that's probably, you're like, all right, well, here we go. The young Emperor Justinian rushed to conclude a war in Persia, brutally put down revolts in his empire. Also, he could devote 100% of the empire's firepower to destroying the Vandal kingdom for the slight of being called an equal by Gelimer. Because in the letter, Gelimer pretty much called himself an equal, and Justinian's like, how dare you call yourself an equal?
You're gonna learn today.
Yeah. When we go into Justinian's reign, which will be a little bit down the road, we're going to go into more details about this. Just know Justinian had a big aspirations of restoring the whole mighty empire of Rome. So this was a big miscalculation by Gelimer. Granted, yeah. I probably would have told Justinian to pound sand as well.
Yeah, I don't know. It's big talk from someone who lived in a kingdom that was getting swarmed by the Moors, so...
Yeah. Especially when you've got, like... The Eastern Roman Empire is nothing compared to the Western Roman Empire. The Eastern Roman Empire got stronger.
Yeah.
While the Western one fell apart.
Yeah. I would not want to try and square myself up against Mr. Empire inferiority complex.
That's a great way of putting it. Shortly after he received news about Justinian mobilizing forces, another messenger came by and informed him that there was a revolt in Tripolania by the local population. This is modern-day Libyan coast. Okay. To make matters worse, he was also informed that Justinian sent forces to aid those rebels.
Sounds about right.
I mean, yeah, that makes sense. Proxy war.
Yeah, never seen that before.
Yeah, and then you know, bad news doesn't come in twos, it comes in threes. Shortly after that messenger departed, another one rode up to replace him and went, I got more bad news for you. The governor in Sardinia, which is, you know, a little island east of Italy, has revolted, and Justinian is openly negotiating with that governor.
Wow.
So Justinian, he really didn't like Gelimer. It is basically what it comes down to. It's kind of interesting.
Well, you know, I think it's just taking advantage of a weak Vandal kingdom, and if you're really trying to restore your former glorious empire, then get some freebie points here.
I have a feeling if Justinian wasn't around, Gelimer could have reformed the Vandal kingdom, but because Justinian is around and he wants the Roman Empire back to its former glory, and he's going to use all of his resources to do that, he's kind of SOL.
Yeah.
But Scott, you're Gelimer in this situation. You just heard of a big buildup of a fleet over in Constantinople. Tripolitanian locals have risen up against you, and your governor in Sardinia has decided that I like to rule by myself, thank you very much. What's your next action?
What, jeez. Let's,
I got some choices for you, so we can have a multiple choice quest, test.
That's it. We're marching. We're marching our troops.
Marching our troops where?
Oh, jeez.
So
if Constantinople wasn't so darn far away.
So you could build up your forces and supplies and your defenses all at Carthage. Let Justinian use Sardinia as a possible launching point. Basically, hold back, get ready, you know, brace yourself for invasion. You could put down the revolt in Tripolitania. Go deal with that first, and then that way Justinian doesn't have a place to land to launch his invasion off of. Or, I am sorry, you could put down the revolt in Tripolitania so you kind of shore up, you know, the issues going on within your own kingdom before you try and deal with outside threats. Or you go invade and retake Sardinia before Justinian can use it as a launching point for an African invasion. Or do you just wave the white flag and submit to Justinian's demands?
I mean, what are his demands? He say he wants the rulers?
Basically, you wait your turn.
Yeah, that's a tough one. So, yeah, no, I say we got to go after Sardinia.
Well,
sounds like a pain. Yeah, let's just head this off with the pass.
Well, you would have chosen what Gelimer chose. He also did that.
Oh, God. This is the last Vandal king.
He sent a good
portion. I can't change history.
He sent a good portion of his troops to recapture Sardinia, as you have stated this is going to be a pretty fatal decision.
Wow.
Didn't do it well enough. In 533, he was campaigning against the Moors, so he must have decided also, like, I'm going to send the majority of my troops to Sardinia, but I'm going to go further south into Africa and campaign against some of the Moors there. So he was 4 days south of Carthage, and he received unwelcome news that Rome had invaded Caput Vada in Africa and was in striking distance of Carthage at the lead of Justinian's top general Belisarius.
Woof.
So immediately he sends orders to his brother in Carthage, and he tells him, first you execute Hilderic and the other prisoners.
Good job. All right.
I mean, yeah, that's
I don't blame him.
That's the smart thing to do. Then you are to gather all of the men and join Gelimer at Ad Decatecinium, which is Latin for the 10th Roman milepost. This is about 9.2 miles south of Carthage.
Okay.
At Decimum, Gelimer plans to ambush and destroy Belisarius' army. This is a brilliant move on his point. This is a really good spot for an ambush, because where he chose it, there was a tiny gap between the salt marsh and the sea, and Gelimer knew that Belisarius would use the Roman roads, because that's what Romans do, and it was in a geographic location to prevent backup from Belisarius's well-equipped fleet. So pretty good base. So the plan is for Amatus to hold the road at Carthage, his brother, and when the Romans are fully engaged with Amatus, Gelimer and his nephew Gigabund will collapse and onto their flank and rear. So, you know, you're going to kind of sandwich them.
Yeah. No, it's good tactics.
The problem is there's no walkie-talkies.
Yeah, that is
or cell phones or satellite phones. So upon approaching the anticipated battlefield, Gelimer catches the Roman cavalry scouts off guard among several bodies of what seems like a fresh battlefield with signs of fighting and the dead and the wounded. So he just rolls up onto scene, and it looks like he already got, like, oh my, like, there already was a battle.
He was already late to the party.
He was already late to the party, and he didn't, like, it was, he didn't realize that, you know, there was something that happened. Gelimer then clashed with the confused Romans, who were confused themselves because they were also running into that. It turns out, like, there was, like, scouting parties ahead that were ambushing, and the two main armies were not aware of this. So Gelimer's cavalry sends the confused Romans fleeing back to Belisarius's anticipated direction. So now Gelimer is in a position to deal Belisarius a seriously gut punch. If he pursues these Romans that are confused and retreating, they're heading straight for Belisarius's men, who are unaware of all of the chaos that is going on, and they are just setting up camp.
Yeah.
However, he discovers the body of his brother, and he is overcome by grief, which you can imagine that would be pretty rough. He halts everything and oversees a proper burial for his brother.
Oh, jeez.
I get it. I really get it. And I don't, this is the Christian sources. I don't know if this exactly is what happened, but I get it. Like, you want to do that, but you have, like, your entire kingdom hanging in the balance here.
Yeah, the Vandal way of life is the warrior's way of life.
Yeah, you have to delegate that to someone else, and you've got to reorganize your men and then go after and follow the Romans, who are clearly fleeing, and, you know, charge them down. So while they're doing that, Gillimer doesn't realize that with his men in time that Roman charging cavalry fall on the Vandals with devastating results, because, you know, the fleeing the basically what happened is that the Roman cavalry who was fleeing away told Belisarius everything what happened. Belisarius basically, you know, scolded them for being cowards and then got them, and then they fell back onto Gelimer. So he has to flee west. He leaves Carthage wide open to the Romans. So he just lost his capital. Not doing well.
Brilliant tactics.
He had a good plan. There was just so much confusion in the fog of war that he really didn't know what was going on. And I have a feeling that there are some things that are being told that are not being told, because, you know, I doubt the Romans knew everything that was going on in Gelimer's camp. So remember that fleet that was sent to quell the rebellion over in Sardinia?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They completed their task. They good overthrew the governor, and now they're headed back to Africa. And he regroups with them at Bola Regia, which is west of Carthage. And he grabs his now fully armed troops again, restocked, ready to go, and he advances to his capital.
All right.
His forces spot Belisarius's cavalry, and they form into a battle formation while the Romans are preparing for lunch. So Romans are once again, they are caught off guard. They're just sitting there making lunch, and, you know, he gets up and is ready to go after them. But for some reason, he doesn't do anything. He doesn't exploit this huge advantage he has. And he lets the Romans deploy in full formation rather than destroy them when they were caught off guard.
Gotta have that honorable battle, I guess.
That is the only thing I can think of, or the Catholic sources are telling us something that we are missing. But
it's hey, we had the divinity, and just kind of came in, the holy light blinded Gelimer's forces, and yeah.
Yeah, that's a, yeah. That's what happened.
A fog settled in.
So while he was sitting there doing nothing, the Roman infantry caught up with their comrades, and then the Romans formed their lines, and then they clashed in the battle.
Brilliant.
A little bit of advice. Quest for power advice. This goes for board games, business, life goals. When you have your boot on your enemy's neck, you step on it. You do not give up. You do not let up. You press forward until your goal is complete. Otherwise, this is what happens. Never let up.
Your sunshine and daisies version is don't give up and stop on your dreams.
Well, that's the sunshine and daisies version. I'm saying like, oh, I want to be nice to them. You know, we're playing a good board game and I want to be nice. I don't want to outright slam them. I've had this happen to me many a times. I'll be like, yeah, I'll be nice. I'll let up a little bit. And then I get crushed because I let up an inch.
That's right. If you give them an inch. So,
back to Gelimer's questionable decision making. The result of the battle is predictable. It is a decisive defeat, leaving 800 Vandal warriors dead on the battlefield, while Rome only lost 50 men.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty bad.
That is what in Rome Total War they would call a heroic victory.
Or defeat. Depends on who you're yeah. siding with.
Yeah. Vandal's nightmare isn't quite over, and it's about to get worse. The warriors take refuge in their camp, which contains all of their wealth, and more importantly, their families. You Lovely. See, when these warriors came, their families were with them. It's the barbarian way of fighting. It is the women almost shame the men, putting themselves in harm's way so their men will go fight for them. It is a unique way, and it's why a lot of the barbarian tribes are very fierce, especially when we are going to deal with the Franks later. This is especially common with them.
Well, it makes sense, although I think there's also another reason why some barbarian tribes may have died out.
Yeah.
It works when it works, but when it doesn't, we're about to see what happens.
So Belisarius isn't as nice as Gelimer, and he approaches the camp. Gelimer flees, and the result is devastating. The Romans descend on the camp, slaughter the men, enslave the women and children, and they take everything. Basically, they did a reverse Uno card on the Vandals.
Woof. Yeah. We saw this coming.
Yep. Gelimer flees to the mountains and is pursued by one of Belisarius' generals, John. What a great... I wonder what the real name was, but for our purposes, his name apparently was John.
All right.
Luckily for Gelimer, John was accidentally killed by one of his own men.
Well, you hate to see it happen.
Now, you might be wondering, how do you get killed by one of your own men in pursuit of a fleeing king?
That's not hard.
So the story goes that one of his men was drunk, and he shot an arrow at a bird, which missed and hit John in the neck.
That's a lot better than most stories you'd hear.
I mean, yeah. That's, yeah, the Romans call themselves civilized. I don't know if that's quite civilized, but that's, I don't know. I know it's horrible, but it's funny at the same time.
It's a tad ironic when, like, you know, warriors, you know, die on the battlefield, but not through battle.
Yeah, exactly. Gelimer holds himself up in Mount Papuia, a little distance southeast of Hippo Regis, which again is in northern Africa. The Romans blockaded the mountain and they set up like a quasi siege. Basically a big blockade.
Mm-hmm.
Geyseric's not coming down. So remember in Geyseric's episode, sieges are just as hard on the people holding the siege, along with costing more time and resources for the people who are sieging.
Yep.
Well, the Roman general Ferus grew really weary of the tedious blockade, and he attempted to take it by force, but the Vandals were so well defended and high up that they just drove him right back.
Mm-hmm.
Despite these successes, his family was starving and the winter conditions were brutal. So they must have been really high up in the mountains to be dealing with brutal winter conditions in Africa. But according to Procopius, Gelimer saw two children fighting over scraps of bread, and then he finally agreed to surrender on the following terms proposed by the Romans. I'll let you read the terms.
All right. It is the wish of Emperor Justinian to have you enrolled in the Senate, thus sharing the highest honor and being a patrician, as we term that rank, and to present you with the spacious and good and great sums of money. And Belisarius is willing to make himself responsible for you having all of these things and to give you pledges.
Are you taking that?
Well...
You're starving. You're at your wit's end.
I mean, what else are you gonna do? Yeah. I mean, unless you're really dedicated to your cause of telling Justinian to pound sand.
The other thing is, do you think the Romans are actually gonna follow through on this?
Of course not.
It is here in the spring of 534, Gelimer surrenders, and it brings an end to the kingdom Geyseric founded just 95 years earlier. The Romans retook all of Africa all the way up to the Strait of Gibraltar.
Good for them. Bad for the Vandals, but good for them.
Yeah. Good. Restoring the might of Rome. It must have been so proud. Well, they were very proud. Gelimer was paraded through the streets of Constantinople as a prisoner in Belisarius's triumph. Have we talked about triumphs yet?
Don't think we have. But this is actually ringing some bells. But
this is a thing in ancient Rome, and this is very high level. I don't have any notes on.
You'd capture like your high ranking opponents, and you'd parade them throughout the empire, right?
Yeah, Julius Caesar had many triumphs. So what it is you are like the ultimate ruler for that day. You are like the god for that day in the days of the old Republic.
Key to the city,
pretty much. And you things are written in your honor. It is a great, glorious parade, essentially. Now, we didn't think the Romans would hold up their end of the bargain. They did. Gelimer was given a luxurious estate in Galatia, which is modern-day Turkey. And here he lived out the rest of his days in comfort with his family. He wasn't given the rank of patrician, since the fine print read that he would have to convert from his Arian religion to the Nicene Creed, which he obviously refused.
Small price to pay for, you know, getting treated incredibly generously.
Yeah.
All he had to do was become a circus man for a day, for probably months.
Yeah, all you had to do is just be humiliated, but then you get to live out in luxury. I mean, that's better than a peasant's way of life.
Responsibilities.
Yeah. He essentially retired. He lost the Super Bowl and retired.
And it just goes to show that no matter how bad things get, it'll be okay as long as you're rich and powerful.
Yes. There were several other uprisings by the Vandals in attempt to restore the Vandal kingdom, but all were eventually defeated.
Yeah.
So, to sum up the legacy of the Vandal kingdom, there's no buildings, no art, no poets, no philosophers. They fell just as quickly as they rose to prominence, and all we really have from them is the word vandalism, which is associated with wanton destruction.
Although, didn't we have a couple Vandal kings who were patricians of the arts?
Yes, but none of those arts survived.
Well, you know, probably on account of all the revolting and being demolished by Rome.
Correct. Like, Rome probably destroyed those, or they were Romanized. Essentially, we have nothing of the Vandal culture. We have no idea what the Vandal culture was.
Yeah, other than we aren't fighting with our families.
How do we assassinate as many relatives as possible without being taken out yourself?
Well, that's something you can all talk about, you and listeners can talk about with your families over the next Thanksgiving dinner.
There you go. Like the Visigothic kingdom of Toulouse, being Arian was the big reason for their downfall. It is the reason for the downfall of so many barbarian kingdoms. If they would have just, at the time of conversion, been converted to Nicene Christianity, we would have a very different world.
Well, it's always kind of fun to think about that... you know, you can attribute their demise to Jesus may have been a different guy.
Yep, I agree. That is kind of funny when you boil it down. Next week, we are going to once again jump into the crumbling remains of Rome, but we are going to be discussing Attila the Hun.
Whoop!
So... he is a fun king, and I think a lot of our power rating systems are going to be destroyed once we go through him.
Much like everything else he touched.
It is a fun, fun research, but oh boy, I would never want to meet him. Let's put it that way.
Well, maybe with like a bulletproof vest and everything else, you know, and... you know, a good 100 yards away.
Yeah. Alrighty, with that, are you ready to rate Gelimer?
Yeah, let's go. royal power.
All right, so my thoughts when researching this. Gelimer is the first time, really, in all of our podcasts that we have a roller coaster king. He shows great courage. He's a cunning man. He sees his power. And then for some reason, he collapses. His power rises up into the six and sevens until about 533, and then it plummets down to zero, but he gets to retire in luxury, so about a one or a two. He had many, many times to rewrite history. The one thing I will give him is the Vandals were not well equipped to handle snap decisions in battle, which Romans were the absolute pros at. It would be like an NFL team playing against a college team. So we have to give him some points for acquiring power when he sees the throne, but that's it. He didn't really wield it effectively, and he lost the kingdom ultimately.
Yeah, I'll give him a two. Just because he's, he obviously he got some power, and he maintained enough of it to... not have everything just revolting during a siege. Not that you have a ton of choice during a siege, but like things, it sounds more or less that he maintained control of things even when things went poorly.
I think I'll give him a little bit more. I think I'll give him like a three. I think he really gave the Romans a run for their money, except for a few questionable decisions. Again, the problem is like we get everything from the Romans' point of view, and we have no idea if those questionable decisions were even true or not.
Yeah. So, yeah. The three and a two for five. All right. Infamy.
All right. So, essentially for infamy, he usurped the throne. He ordered the death of his family members when everything went south. He returned the kingdom to the good old days of persecuting Christians. And he's the reason the Vandal Kingdom is no more.
I feel like none of that's really infamous.
That is true. I will give him
a one
point for persecuting Christians, because that's
scandalous by today's age, and kind of back then too, depending on which kingdom you were allied with.
I was going to say, if you were allied with the Visigoths, you'd be like, yeah, screw those Christians. But if you were allied with Rome, they wouldn't take to that too kindly.
Yeah, Nicene Christians, yeah.
Yeah, Nicene Christians, not just regular.
Not your garden variety. On to the next. Religious passion.
All right, so for religious passion, he reinstituted the persecution of the Catholics upon usurping the throne, and he refused to convert to Catholicism despite probably great pressure and being at the mercy of the the Romans when he was captured.
I'm willing to give like a four, I guess. It's not, reinstituting persecution is fairly passionate, and I'd say that there is some level, but it sounds like that him not converting in the end was not at great risk
in the end. But how do you know that at the time? Like you were saying last week, are you going to tell your king, that...
I mean, he's already at all of their mercy during this whole time.
I mean, that's true. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. All right. Let's see here. I couldn't find too much important things like that he was really passionate about. So I'll give him a four for those as well.
All right. For a total of eight. Stability.
All right, so out of five, how much do you think stability there?
10. I'm kidding, it's zero.
Yeah, this kingdom collapsed. The Vandals are no more. Alaric II didn't even make the Visigoths go extinct. His kingdom fell, but the Visigoths still stayed in power.
Yeah, so. I think he just had bad luck syndrome, but we can elaborate on that later.
Yep.
All right, royal demise.
Zero. He lived out the rest of his days in luxurious estate in Turkey. That's
must be nice.
That'd be pretty nice.
All right, legacy.
All right, so for legacy, this is all I have. He is the last of the Vandal Kings, and can you think of anything?
I mean, if you count, I suppose that he was helping with some of the last hurrahs in the attempts of reclaiming the more western side of the Roman Empire. And that's a bit of a stretch.
I can't give him a single point in legacy. Yeah, he left nothing behind. His kingdom crumbled to dust.
Boy, he's for as an impressive of a human being this person was, did not score particularly high.
Oof. How much total did we get here?
A whopping 15.
Okay, so how long do you think he ruled in his entire reign?
7 years.
Give it about 4. He
in which direction?
Did in June of 530 all the way to March 534.
Yeah.
Which that kind of sounds about right with the timeline of things. That must have been a very bang bang sort of events in his once he took over.
Had a very exciting time.
Alrighty, the question we've all been waiting for. What shall his fate be? Shall he be raised to High King, reduced to a minor lord, or does he deserve to be burnt at the stake?
He's a regrettable burning.
Really? I think he should be a minor lord. He ended up being a minor lord in a luxurious estate at the end. He did give the Romans a run for their money.
Yeah, but like I said, it feels like if it were any other time, if he had shown up like one or two rulerships earlier, he probably would have been better off. But
this is our, I could see that. This is our first disagreement. And I think just because we want to make it a harsh grading system, the lower one wins, so he gets burned at the stake.
Ha! Add one more to the pile.
That's it for Gelimer and the Vandal Kingdom. Let us know what you thought of the Vandals. Do you think they are worthy of being talked about in history? I personally think just Geyseric is worthy of being talked about. The rest of them, I already forgot most of their reigns.
It was there, and they probably will be more worth talking about when you talk about either Roman history or the Moors.
Yes.
There will be more context because they'll be like, well, you mean Africa wasn't just a, you know, an empty space? No, there are people living there.
Geyseric.
Very powerful people.
Geyseric actually will make an entrance into next episode because I think by the way they're talking about events in the sources, and I'm sure, like, if I flat out look it up, it's true. I think Geyseric and Attila the Hun were alive at the same time.
That's fun.
Which is pretty cool in my book.
They could have been best buds.
They really could have. They both enjoyed a brutal murder.
Yeah.
Even if you're listening to our podcast years after this is published, and we are probably way better at this, don't hesitate to contact us. We created this podcast because we love talking about history and we want to share that passion with all of you. You can message us via Messenger on Facebook and Instagram at Quest for Power, or you can email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. If you would like to support what we do here, please leave us a review or subscribe on whatever platform you use. However, we will read all 5-star reviews posted to podchaser.com/whatever the Quest for Power. You just search it and the link will be in the show notes. And thank you if you have made it this far in the episode. Next week, I was planning on doing Attila the Hun as a future Patreon episode, but as I kept reading about him, he really kicks off the Dark Ages, and it would be a shame to not include him in our big overall story of Europe. Until next time, the king is dead.
Long live the king!